You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Of course, the word cult has a lot of implications in the world of today, and really in the past 100 years or so. Even though we have heard about really crazy ones like the Manson family, Heaven's Gate, and the People's Temple at Jonestown since the 1960s, and to be honest, a lot of that knowledge is likely because of the growing worldwide media after the war. But cults from this millennium are not my focus. If true crime is what you want, I'm sure there's a podcast to fit your interest more on the suggested tab. But hey, hang around for a bit, or listen there and then come back. Ancient cults are still extremely interesting. But I digress. Ancient cults were different. A system of religious veneration and devotion directed towards a particular figure or object. Generally, a smaller group than the majority accepted religion. However, even this isn't a fully working definition for the regularity and acceptance of cults. Really, an ancient cult was the veneration of a particular deity, as opposed to the rest of the pantheon at the same time. This was also worldwide. We are told that we have cults in Mesoamerica of Quetzalcoatl, the cult of the Dionysian Mysteries. This one went against the upper class societal norms, even though later it was accepted by them. And the cults of Isis, Amun, Osiris, and Horus as divine cults, along with funerary cults for ancestors. In case it seems like cults can't just be gods that are, good, even though all of the deity examples I gave are friends to humanity plus more. Cult was a word that was twisted to be a scary term for non-Christian worship because the Latin root colere meant to till, to cultivate, and to worship. It evolved into the noun cultus, simplifying care, worship, or devotion. The term entered English in the 17th century via French culte, initially referring to a system of worship, and over time its meaning broadened to include devotion to a person or thing, and by the early 20th century it developed the negative connotation it often carries today, referring to unorthodox and or extremist groups. The Seth was a trickster, and could be bad, but he could also be a hero, that is, until the beginning of the New Kingdom. My name is Renee Whitehouse, you're listening to Detours in Archaeology, and this is Seth, a cult leader? In the rundown of the episode named Seth of Episode 2 in Season 3, Dr. Daniel Jackson goes over his research into Seth from the Goa'uld's history. On the family tree that they show at the very beginning, or like a family pyramid, Seth is one of the four gods that are right beneath Ra. And then there's another line, and I think there are eight in that row. But Seth, aka Setek, Seti, Seth, or Setesh, the ancient Egyptian god of chaos, the embodiment of hostility and outright evil. Out of thousands of Goa'uld, there were 12 system lords who are met later in the show. The Tok'ra lost track of Seth when Earth's Stargate was buried in ancient Egypt. They reveal that he never left Earth, and on the moderate cliffhanger, hill hanger? Then they go into the intro. Sam's dad, Selmak, the representative of the Tok'ra, says that Seth had a price on his head because he went against Ra. System lords wanted and still want him dead, as did the Tok'ra, since he's still a Goa'uld. So he wants to keep hiding so he wouldn't be caught. But he still has that embedded yearning for power and worship. It actually takes until the 7 minute and 30 second mark for them to actually start telling the entire history of Seth on Earth by tracking cults. Daniel says that there have been cults throughout history, in one form or another, honoring Seth since 1000 BCE. He was represented by an animal that was either fictitious or extinct, and most likely the former rather than the latter, since anthropologists haven't been able to find any fossils. Which in itself is a strange thing for Daniel to say. Anthropologists don't dig up fossils, that's paleontologists, which he should differentiate as an archaeologist, a subset of anthropology. Then, Tilk chimes in with one of my favorite bits of the entire freaking show. The helmets of the Setesh Guard have been a source of many jokes among the Jaffa. And one of them, translated, is, a serpent guard, a Horus guard, and a Satesh guard meet on a neutral planet. It is a tense moment. The serpent guard's eyes glow. The Horus guard's beak glistens. The Satesh guard's nose drips. And Teal'c bursts out laughing, but no one gets it. And of course he feels very embarrassed, and it's sad because it's so endearing. After an uncomfortable silence, Daniel adds, after Seth was supposedly killed in ancient Egypt, along with all of his minions, a similar god showed up called Typhon. Similar backstories and domains, and another fictitious animal representation. The original mythological Typhon was generally described as a gigantic winged serpentine-ish monster in Greek mythology, described as having a human torso, a massive star-brushing head, with fiery eyes and a lower body composed of coiling snakes. He possessed hundreds of dragon-like venomous heads on his fingers and could mimic the sounds of any animal. His immense size and monstrous features symbolized the destructive force of violent storms and volcanic activity. But of course, sources varied. In the show, they never actually describe him, but one of Typhon's last myths is that he killed 300 followers, then disappeared from Greece. And any connections to Seth seem to disappear from recorded history altogether. Until, that is, the cult of Satesh that arose in England in the early 1800s, near the location of Stonehenge. The cult had an enigmatic leader named Seth. They were constantly under attack by the Christians then, and Daniel says, the worshippers, all of them, were found dead, having slit their own throats. The website, though, actually says 1722 in Wiltshire, England. That's definitely not the 1800s, but it is the 18th century. But Seth's body was never found. Dun dun dun. Daniel then followed a whim to search the CIA website for cults in the 1990s. The ATF, the Bureau for Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, was investigating a cult leader named Seth in the show because they had become so heavily armed and fortified with about 50 followers who were apparently ready to die for him. On the ATF webpage, he found a file on the children of Seth, which in the show is a cult just north of Seattle led by a guy supposedly born in 1962, but they had a question mark because they don't really know, named Seth Fargo, played by Robert Duncan. Why didn't the character change his name over the centuries of time? Probably still would have been tracked down by the team, but he's definitely not in hiding. Luckily, there were deprogrammed members of the cult who the government interviewed, and they described Seth as having magical powers with the ability to heal. Sources, in the show, said that it came from his hand, and the ATF said that reports were attributed to the hallucinogenic drugs to enforce control within the cult. But the website adds, harder to attribute is that several independent reports said that the cult leader can make his eyes glow, and expert professionals had no explanation for this phenomenon. What I do like is that the show really wrote out this entire thing that I was just reading, even more than they're actually talking about in the show. It's really nice when the background prop and set work is actually done. The cult members were controlled through the drug Nishta, which made them subservient to the Ghoul's will. Women who were part of the cult became part of a harem that tended to Lord Satesh, while some males would become guards and warriors who were stationed outside. Some other males would be located inside Satesh's temple and were eunuchs. The cult had access to both human weapons as well as some advanced Gwalwold equipment that Satesh would provide. They must be really old. The cult came to an end when Satesh was killed by Captain Samantha Carter at the end of the episode. So, yes, by the end of the episode, Seth does get killed and is never seen again. Talk about a one-off villain. What we don't know in the show until a much later season is the confirmation that Seth is the brother of Osiris. Seth had banished Osiris and his queen Isis many thousands of years ago on Earth. He played the two Ghoul symbiotes into small stasis jars that looked like canopic jars, and according to Egyptian mythology, in the show, cast them into the Nile River. Isis eventually perished because the jar cracked, but in the episode The Curse, Osiris escaped imprisonment took on the new host archaeologist Dr. Sarah Gardner, Daniel Jackson's ex-girlfriend, and fled Earth, only to later return to the show and will be discussed on a later podcast episode. A little bit behind the scenes, the cult of Sadesh has several parallels with real-life branch Davidian cult involved in the infamous Waco Siege of 1993. For example, the leader, David Koresh, believed in an imminent coming of the apocalypse and illegally stockpiled machine guns, ammunition, and explosives in anticipation of such a battle. But getting back to the mythology, Daniel, and by extension the entire show, missed all of the nuance from before Seth, or the actual mythological deity, was evil. So I won't make that mistake. Let's start at as much of a beginning as possible. Multiple debates concern the true nature of Set, son of Nut, since he is described as the god of confusion and disorder. One may be tempted to compare him to Hermes of Greece, or Loki or Odin of Norse mythology, or even Coyote from indigenous groups in North America, all notorious for being mischievous tricksters. However, Seth's character is more complicated than this. Although both Loki and Hermes share some characteristics with Seth, this mysterious Egyptian god is incredibly muddled with interpretations and misrepresentations. The confusion is only exacerbated by the relative lack of depth in available texts. One thing remains certain, the god Set is not a simple character. His stories and worship, or lack thereof in some cases, evolve to reflect his constantly shifting image. Many aspects of his nature remain shrouded in mystery, which further complicate his character. Scholars continue to debate the exact zoomorphic form that Seth embodies, a characteristic that is well defined in many other Egyptian deities, such as Horus as the falcon, Anubis as the jackal, Ra as the eagle, Sekhmet as the lion or cat, and Thoth as the ibis. Set, however, appears in both semi-anthropomorphic and fully animal representations, featuring a curved head, small square-topped ears, and erect arrow-like tails. Despite this, his form still remains a mystery to modern researchers, and varies in a lot of different pieces of art. For instance, Newberry, while acknowledging that the depictions on monuments resemble greyhounds, insists that they are actually semi-feral and feral swine, backing his argument with numerous ancient murals depicting pigs. Unfortunately, no one claim has ever been convincing enough. Due to this lack of consensus, the animal is now simply referred to as the Seth animal. Several debates about this mysterious creature involve various Egyptologists and their arguments for aardvarks, oryxes, donkeys, okapi, and even camels. Such a lack of understanding of just Seth's iconography further heightens his role as the god of confusion to a modern audience. The origin and meaning of Seth's name is also confounding. It can be written and pronounced in many ways. In Egyptian texts, the Seth animal itself was used as a determinative, usually for words associated with the disruptions of truth and order, such as physical aggression, loud noises, disease, and unusual meteorological events. Set as the patron god of the 11th nome of Upper Egypt is found in multiple hieroglyphs or equivalent cursive scripts. In the pyramid texts, Set is an established member of the Eni, the group of nine gods consisting of the creator god and the first three generations of his offspring, which feature in the creation account associated in the town of Enlil, in Greek, Heliopolis, the main center of the Egyptian solar cult. The creator god Atum rose upon a primeval mound out of the waters of chaos. Atum created the first gendered pair of deities, Shu and Tifnut, who went on to produce the gods Geb and Nut, earth and sky. The latter pair of deities had four or five divine children of their own, depending on the version. Osiris, Isis, Set, Nephthys, and Heru-Ur, called Horus the Elder, who is distinct from Horus the Younger, son of Osiris and Isis. Again, depends on the version. But it is this mythic lineage that gives Seth one of his most common epithets, son of Nut. Set was the Egyptian god of war, chaos, and storms. He was always considered a brother husband to Nymphis, despite having multiple wives and consorts. One of his other consorts, a main one, was the goddess Terawet, a hippo-headed deity who presided over fertility and childbirth. Which, you'd think Greece would connect him pretty seamlessly to Ares, the god of war, with his affair with the goddess of love Aphrodite, but I guess not. His name is usually translated as Instigator of Confusion and Destroyer, and was associated with disorder, foreign lands and people, and the color red. In some versions, he was depicted as bursting out of the womb of his mother, Nut. He was said to have been an unfaithful husband to his consort and sister, Nymphis, because he had multiple wives and mistresses, even though that wasn't abnormal at the time, and murdering Osiris, whom he tricked into entering a chest, which he then closed and hurled into the river to be carried out to the Mediterranean Sea. However, after either Osiris's murder or his imprisonment and then death, again depending on the version, Horus the Younger was conceived miraculously by Osiris's wife and sister, Isis. Unless he wasn't. Wink. For the son-uncle narrative, as in Horus and Set, much like Hamlet and the Lion King, Horus struggled to depose Set from his father's throne. And, as in the prodigal son returns trope, this struggle forms the theme of the Ramesside text, The Contending of Horus and Set. This borders on satire, and the later, much more somber version reported by Plutarch does have Set as the embodiment of the Greek demon Typhon, which I'll go over more later. In Egypt, instead of a dragon-like monster, Set was a different sort of composite figure. As I discussed, he had a canine body, slanting eyes, square-tipped ears, and a tuft, or forked in many representations, tail, and a long, curved, pointed snout. Sometimes he is more specifically depicted as a red-haired beast with a forked tail and cloven hooves, or a shaggy red dog-like beast known as a shah, or to modern-day scholars as the Set animal, which some scholars claim was modeled on the Saluki breed, while others maintain was a purely mythological creature imagined specifically to represent Set, whose other symbols were the griffin, hippopotamus, crocodile, and tortoise, though he was primarily associated with the serpent. But he was also represented by various animals, including an aardvark, antelope, ass, camel, fennec, so fox, greyhound, jackal, jerboa, long-snouted mouse, okapi, oryx, and pig have all been suggested as the basis of the form. Because the ancient Egyptians rendered his figure inconsistently, it is probably a mythological composite. Originally, Set was a sky god, lord of the desert, master of storms, disorder, and warfare, and notably acted as the trickster archetype. His epithets include lord of the desert and ruler of the south, originally a god of Upper Egypt. Because the Nile runs south to north, so Set rules the mountains and the lands beyond Egypt's borders. The worship of Set originally centered at Nubits, Ombros in Greek, near present-day Duke, on the western bank of the Nile River. Nubits, with its vast cemetery at Naqada, which by the way is the mineral that the Stargate is made of, was the principal pre-dynastic center of Upper Egypt, which was the cult center for his worship for a time. This is the probable reason for his title, Nubuti, or the One of Nubits. Though Naqada was located in the 5th nome of Upper Egypt, Set was also venerated in the 10th, 11th, and 19th nomes, as well as the royal city of Pi Ramses in the Delta. The prolific worship of the god proved his significance across basically all of Egypt. As the patron god of Upper Egypt, he was thought to have been born at the entrance to the Wadi Hammamat, and to function as the counterpart to Horus of Lower Egypt. The town lost its preeminent position with the unification of Egypt around 3000 BCE, which was carried out under kings whose capital was Abydos and whose royal god was Horus. In the early dynastic period, so 3150 to 2613 BCE, Set was an important and benevolent god of Upper Egypt, whose name was invoked for love spells and inscribed on amulets which served as love charms. He was also a deity who saved the sun god Ra from the serpent Apophis, or Apep, an evil creature who tried to stop the sun god's journey through the night sky towards dawn. Listen to the Apep episode to hear more about him. Egyptologist Wilkinson comments on this myth and sets Ra as a hero, writing, "It is said each night Apophis hypnotized Ra and the entourage who sail with him, except for the god Seth, who resisted the serpent's deadly stare and repulsed him with the thrust of a giant spear. Set assured the sun would rise the next morning, and could also be seen as a benefactor who helped the people in life and provided for them after death. The image of Set first appears on the mace head of King Scorpion, one of the most prominent kings of pre-dynastic Egypt. The relic was retrieved from the main deposit of Hierakonpolis, a southern Egyptian site that is notably significant and prolific source of archaeological evidence. This particular ceremonial weapon dates to the first Naquadah period, 4th millennium BCE, confirming that Set was one of the oldest Egyptian gods. Some Egyptologists have even suggested that Set was the primary god in the Naquadah 1 culture. However, according to another Egyptologist, Wainwright, the most definitive evidence of Set's presence in the region appears in the form of a figure that dates to the Naquadah 2 culture. Wainwright believes that the image on the mace head of King Scorpion is actually that of Min, a fertility god similar to but separate from Set. Similar to the complex and contradictory character of Set in mythology, his worship in ancient Egypt evolved through multiple phases. Consider the Second Dynasty, occurring approximately 1700 years before the composition of the Contendings, and only a few centuries following the spread of the Naquadah culture. One of its later pharaohs, Peribsen, broke with a long-standing tradition by adopting a Set named Serek instead of the customary Horus named Serek, being Seth Peribsen. This choice, favoring the desert god as his patron, was potentially revolutionary. Earlier Egyptologists proposed that Seth Peribsen's Set Serek indicated the existence of two rival kingdoms in pre-dynastic Egypt, one ruled by Horus and the other by Seth, and that Peribsen's rise marked a temporary victory for the Seth faction. Egyptologist Dunn contributes to this discussion by noting that Seth Peribsen's successor, Khosekhem, altered his Horus name to Khosekhemwy, meaning the two powerful ones appear after he quashed the rebellion, thus uniting Upper and Lower Egypt. The Serek for Khosekhemwy, once again diverging from tradition, uses both Horus and Seth iconography, embedding the notion of a newfound harmony. Seth's reign as the patron god was short, as Zoser, the first king of the Third Dynasty, promptly returned to the traditional Horus name. This earlier rivalry of Horus and Seth must have been the cause of Seth into the myth of Osiris and Horus as their enemy and rival. Though this conjecture of competing kingdoms has fallen out of favor by scholars over time, the unconventional Thereks remain powerful evidence that Seth was a venerable god that pharaohs chose to adopt and worship along with or even over Horus. In fact, Seth's presence in the royal Serek was not fully eliminated. There's an example of the golden Horus name, in which the traditional Horus falcon appears together with a hieroglyph gold spelling out the golden falcon, first done by King Kaba of the Third Dynasty. The golden Horus name is more just a subtle innovation of the god, as Seth was expressed as gold because of its association with the cult center Nubis, the city of gold. Considering ancient Egyptians' dualistic view of the world, the presence of Horus in the early titulary of the king may have been balanced with that of Set under the guise of the golden Horus name. The direct expression of Set may have been avoided given his status as a god of chaos and his history of fratricide. Nonetheless, his power and presence over the royal authority persisted. The fluid nature of his cult mirrored both the Egyptians' evolving perceptions of him and the changing political landscape of Egypt, long after the Third Dynasty. King Apophis was a member of the Hyksos Dynasty, the first non-Egyptian family of kings to rule Egypt, as a foreigner himself, it makes sense that he would worship a god of foreigners. During this era of Hyksos rulers and their dominance, spanning roughly 50 years beyond the Second Intermediate Period, circa 1630 to 1521 BCE, Set was revered at their capital, Avaris, located in the northeastern Nile Delta, where he was equated with the Canaanite god Baal, a god of storms and aggression. In the papyrus-recorded story called The Quarrel of Apophis and Sekhwanenre, it is noted that King Apophis of the 15th dynasty adopted for himself Set as lord, and he refused to serve any god that was from the entire land except Set. Eventually, the Hyksos were expelled from Egypt by the Thebans of the 17th dynasty, but their cultural and religious influence, namely Set worship, persisted. By the New Kingdom, 1570 to 1069 BCE, he came to be known as the first murderer who killed his older brother Osiris to reign over the world and then tried to murder Osiris's son Horus. However, by the late New Kingdom, after the whole mess with Akhetaten, Tut, and the whole Game of Thrones style vying for power, Set reappeared as the patron deity of the Ramesside kings of the 19th and 20th dynasties of the New Kingdom. Some Ramesside kings adopted names and invoked him, such as Seti I and Seti II, whose names literally meant Man of Seth, and the first pharaoh of the 20th dynasty, Set Nakhte, whose name meant Victorious is Seth. Set was esteemed as a major god who could sow discord among Egypt's enemies. The Ramesside pharaohs, who ruled 1292 to 1075 BCE, who originated in the northeastern delta, interesting that that's the same place as the Hyksos, ranked him among the great gods of Egypt, and reaffirmed the image of Set as the protector of Ra in the prow of his bark, slaying Ra's enemy, Apep. Set also joined Amun, Ra, and Ta as the fourth of the principal gods of the cosmos. Additionally, Ramses III was honored with a granite statue that depicts both Horus and Seth crowning him as king, which is a pretty blatant hint at Seth's political significance. The names and the statue clearly point to the king's devout worship of both of these gods. The most notable example of Seth worship occurred during the reign of Ramses II, the construction of the year 400 stela. This granite stela, first discovered in the ruins of a temple in the city of Tanis by Auguste Mariette, marks the arrival of the Hyksos in Egypt, another connection between the two, commemorating Set's 400 years of rule over Egypt. The stela portrays Ramses II making an offering of two vases of wine to Seth, whom the inscription describes as son of Mut. The fact that Ramses II gave orders to set up the stela in the city of Avaris, the former political capital of the Hyksos, shows that the religious practices of the Hyksos were carried on by later native-born kings. After the New Kingdom, Egypt lost its empire and later its independence. As the cult of Osiris grew in prominence, Set was generally ousted from the Egyptian pantheon. In the first millennium BCE, his name and image were scratched off of many monuments. He was now identified as a god of the eastern invaders, including the Persians. No longer able to reconcile Set with Horus the Younger, which was basically the only one that the Greeks loved. Apophis, at this point, and Set, equated with evil, the Greek giant father of monsters Typhon, who challenged the might of Zeus and was hurled into Tartarus. Elaborate rituals and the repeated defeat of Set as an enemy largely replaced the earlier ritual destructions of Apophis. Set worship disappeared, no new temples were built in his honor, and no royal names invoked him. It has been speculated that the Egypt of the Third Intermediate Period experienced an increased rate of aggression and conflicts with the Asiatic, including the Assyrians and the Persians, and had developed a more negative perception of foreigners. The reputation of the divine foreigner was tarnished in the process, becoming increasingly associated with foreign oppressors in a process of demonization. Up until this point, Set was an ambiguous figure, but by the 26th dynasty, this was no longer the case. According to an Egyptologist named Turner, the Assyrian invasion of Egypt had scarred the inhabitants greatly, especially due to the sacking of Thebes. He, Set, now appears as a foreign ruler who has been defeated and driven out. But unlike his association with the Hyksos, there is now no attempt at reconciliation. Set had become a symbol to be removed, castigated, abhorred. As a result, his images and statues were destroyed and sometimes even repurposed to honor other gods, such as Khnum or Amun. The actual reasons why Set's attributes and image changed from a hero god or at worst a trickster to the enemy of order and justice are unknown. But by the Osiris myth becoming popular during the New Kingdom, Set's transformation was complete. However, he was still invoked by common people and pharaohs for assistance, and his name was evident in that of rulers. Although his main wife was his sister Nephthys, he was also associated with foreign goddesses such as the warrior goddess Anat from Ugarit in Syria and Astarte, the queen of heaven, from Phoenicia. It is thought that he represented the dry and barren desert lands and distant territories outside of Egypt, as contrasted with Osiris and Horus, who symbolized the fertility of the Nile River Valley. From the New Kingdom onward, Set was regarded as the villain according to the Osiris myth, with different variations. But as noted, it was not always so. In the early dynastic period, Perepsen, the sixth king of the Second Dynasty, chose Set rather than Horus as his patron god. Osiris was seen as the first king, but following his death and resurrection, could no longer lord over the earth. Horus is this version's rightful heir, and so Egyptian kings from the early dynastic period onward identified themselves with Horus and claimed the protection of Isis as representatives of her son on earth. When the pharaoh died, he was identified with Osiris in the realm of the dead. It is quite interesting then that Perepsen should have chosen to align himself with Set rather than Horus. Although the story of Set's murder of Osiris does not gain full momentum until later in history, Osiris' name and an early version of the story appears in the 5th dynasty, 2498 to 2345 BCE, and it is thought to be even older. Perepsen is the only king of the early dynastic period to separate himself from Horus and align with Set. Since Set was originally recognized as a hero god, it is logical that the king might have selected him as a patron. However, by the era of Perepsen, the connection between the monarch and Horus had become well established instead of Set. Reneb, the second king of the Second Dynasty, was the first to link the Egyptian monarchy directly to the gods by associating his name with the sun god Ra, who is traditionally linked to Horus. Nonetheless, Ra was also connected to Set. Perepsen of Upper Egypt may have chosen Set as his protector deliberately to distinguish himself from Horus, who was then associated with Lower Egypt. All evidence of Perepsen's reign comes from Upper Egypt, and he is not mentioned in the inscriptions of Lower Egypt from the period. The Second Dynasty is among the more obscure, owing to a significant lack of records from the time and confusion among those which do exist. It wasn't until the 19th dynasty that another king would so clearly identify himself with Set,
under the king named Seti I, who reigned 1290 to 1279 BCE, whose father was Ramses I, who reigned 1295 to 1294 BCE, and again in 1292 to 1290, who began the Ramesside period and the 19th dynasty. And Seti I's great-grandson was Seti II. Seti I's son, Ramses II, aka Ramses the Great, the most well-known king of the 19th dynasty, made Set a national god and honored him with a temple in the capital, the Sepermeru, where his wife Nephthys was also worshipped.
Focusing on some more myths, Set was originally a god of the desert, the Red Land, and as the god of the Red Land, he opposed and threatened the civilized society and sedentary lives of the floodplains or the Black Land, thus earning him the title God of Violence, Chaos, and Confusion. In later Egypt, however, he evolved to become more of a symbol of foreign power expressed in the form of crimes in sickness and disease, as well as civil unrest and foreign invasion. In a world where the preservation of Ma'at
was considered to be one of the most significant roles of the king, and where foreigners were thought to be physical manifestations and harbingers of chaos, Set would have been a source of fear and a force of destabilization. As such, he was a foil to Horus, the god of unity and traditional patron god of the pharaohs. The other gods of his family, or the great Aeneid of Heliopolis, treated him as such. But Set embodied the necessary and creative elements of violence and disorder within the ordered world. The first five gods of Egypt were born of the union between brother and sister gods Geb and Nut after the creation of the world by a tomb. Osiris was the firstborn, then Isis, then Set, Nephthys, and Heroer, also known as Horus the Elder. As firstborn, Osiris was elevated as ruler of the world, which to the Egyptians meant the land of Egypt. Osiris found the newly created people to be barbarous and uncivilized, and so gave them culture, taught them agriculture, and provided them with laws and instructed them in the proper ways to worship the gods. Osiris took his sister Isis as his wife, and she bestowed on humans her gifts of compassion and equality for all. The world was a paradise where everyone, man and woman, was equal under the reign of the royal couple, food was abundant, and no one suffered any want. Later versions of the mythology changed Anubis' parentage to be Nephthys and Osiris from the earlier myths, which depicted him as the son of Ra and Bastet. This later version paints Set in a different light once again, because perhaps in earlier versions, Set had affairs with other goddesses. Not gonna argue that that's okay. But Nephthys never had an affair. But in the later versions, the point is made that Set had grown jealous of Osiris's power and resented his success. His resentment grew more bitter after his wife Nephthys, who was afraid of his wrath and likely attracted by Osiris, disguised herself as Isis and seduced the great king, becoming pregnant with the god Anubis. Just a side note, I haven't seen anyone talk about the messed up nature of this entire coupling that was added to the myth. Nephthys essentially raped her brother. Nephthys tricked her brother into having sex with her. There's no getting around that. It's just like what Zeus would do all the time, and we all know he's gross. But if she wasn't disguised, this also makes Osiris look like a total douche for having an affair against Isis, who is the mistress of magic and, by the way, actually the most powerful god in the pantheon, since she knows Ra's true name. But that's another story. But then, Osiris left Nephthys to face Set alone, because I don't know any myths about Osiris actually defending her. With all of this resentment, Set decided to remove his brother and had a casket created, the most beautiful chest ever made, tailored to Osiris' exact measurements. He threw a grand party, to which, of course, Osiris was invited, and after the banquet, Set told the guests that he had a special surprise. He revealed the chest and said that whoever could fit most perfectly inside it could take it home. One by one, the guests climbed into the casket, but none could fit until Osiris' turn came. He lay down in the casket and found that it fit him perfectly. Set then slammed the lid shut and threw the casket into the Nile. In some versions of the story, Osiris is murdered by Set and 72 accomplices, while in others, Set alone is responsible. A further variation is that sometimes Set is to have murdered Osiris in the casket and then dispose of it, while in other versions, Osiris suffocates once he is thrown into the river or after the casket is encased by the tree at Byblos. The casket with Osiris's body in it floated down the Nile and out to sea, finally coming to the shores of Byblos in Phoenicia, where it lodged in a tamarisk tree. The tree quickly grew around it, encasing it, and Osiris was lost to the people of Egypt. In time, the king and queen of Byblos came to the shore and noticed the beauty of the tree and its sweet scent, and had it cut down and brought into their court as a central pillar. Back in Egypt, Set had taken the throne, and the harmonious balance which had been maintained by Osiris and Isis was lost. Sounds a lot like Lion King. Set was a chaotic and unpredictable monarch who brought storms and drought, and the people turned on each other in their efforts to survive. But again, this is only if we ignore the myths of Set and Horus the Elder in competition, which kept the world in balance. Following this less kind Set version, Isis went in search of her missing husband and finally came to Byblos, where she endeared herself to the king and queen Isis asked for the Tamaris pillar, which they quickly gave her. She freed Osiris from the tree and brought him back to Egypt, where she hid his body in the swampy marshes of the Nile Delta while she went off to gather herbs to revive him. Worried that Set might discover the body, she asked her sister Nephthys to keep watch. Set, in the meantime, heard that Osiris had returned to Egypt and went searching for him. He found Nephthys and tricked her into revealing where the body was hidden. Set then hacked the body into pieces and flung all the parts across the land and into the river. When Isis returned with her herbs, a tearful Nephthys told her what happened, and together they went looking for the body parts to reassemble them. And if you listened to my Harrower episode a few weeks ago, you'll know that this is a slightly different version. Once Isis had put Osiris back together, she found that he was incomplete. His penis had been eaten by the Oxyrhynchus fish and could not be retrieved. Isis was still able to return her husband to life, but since Osiris was incomplete, he could no longer rule over the living world and would have to descend to the underworld. Isis transformed herself into a kite, a falcon, and flew around his body, drawing seed into her body and becoming pregnant with the god Horus, sometimes referred to as Horus the Younger. And Osiris then went into the underworld, where he became Lord of the Dead and Judge of Souls. But this is necessary for balance of the world, even though it's still uncool. Death is a natural and inevitable part of ordered existence. The death of Osiris in itself may not have been presented as a wholly negative event. In the Book of the Dead, Atum even says, "How perfect is that which I have done for Osiris in contradistinction from all gods. I have given him the realm of the dead." Therefore, Seth's actions were not considered reprehensible, as the only explicit mention in Pharaonic texts of punishment leveled against Seth for the death of Osiris is Seth having to carry Osiris. When Seth killed his brother, he was serving as the powerful and necessary catalyst which set Osiris's rebirth into the afterlife in motion. A mythic event which allowed humanity to hope for their rebirth after death. In this light, Set and Osiris may have been seen as a cosmic duality, representing two points in the continuum of the process of rebirth. An Egyptian manuscript from the 20th dynasty, 1190 to 1077 BCE, tells the much older story of the battle for control of the world between Horus as the son of Osiris and his own Set. Known as the Contendings of Horus and Set, is the account of the legal battle before the gods over who is the rightful king of Egypt. Horus and Set both provided their cases and then must prove themselves in a series of contests and battles, which are all won by Horus, who in the end is proclaimed king. The Contendings of Horus and Set is one version of the events that follow Horus' birth and Osiris' descent into the underworld, but other myths tell different parts of the story. For example, Isis hid her son in the Nile Delta swamps to protect him from Set, who sought to kill him. The well-known tale of Isis and the Seven Scorpions takes place during this period and shows Isis begging for food at night in nearby towns to sustain herself and Horus. Various legends explore Horus' childhood and Isis' care before he challenged Set for the throne upon reaching maturity. In some versions, Horus defeats Set and drives him away, while others end with Set's death. The Contendings of Horus and Set portrays their battles as divine contests overseen by Egypt's nine gods. Most gods decided that Horus was the rightful ruler, but Ra remained unconvinced. Doubting Horus' youth and sheltered life compared to Set's proven, if erratic, kingship. Despite Horus winning every contest, Ra still didn't approve, prolonging the trial for over 80 years and allowing Egypt to suffer under Set's chaotic rule. Isis, recognizing the need to act for the people's welfare, transformed into a young woman and sat outside of Set's palace, where he would inevitably pass. She wept, staining her cheeks with tears, until Set noticed and questioned her. She explained how her husband's brother, a wicked man, had murdered him, seized his land and flocks, and driven her and her son from their inheritance, even threatening her son's life. Deeply moved and enraged by her plight, Set vowed to destroy the wrongdoer and restore the land to her family. Isis then revealed her true identity and the presence of the gods who had been listening. Convinced by the truth, Ra finally agreed that Horus should rule, and Set was banished from the Nile Valley to the desert wastelands. Good thing Set cared about people, even though he's not particularly self-aware. Horus ascended the throne as king of the world, with Isis at his side as queen mother, ruling with the same wisdom his father had shown. Peace and order returned to the land, and the people's equality was reestablished. The Nile once again flooded its banks, a blessing from Osiris, bringing fertility to the soil and bountiful harvests. Horus emulated his father's legacy in every way, upholding the principles of kingship and land stewardship that would become the guiding standards and values for Egypt's mortal rulers. In an alternate version of the contendings of Horus and Set, the gods failed to reach an agreement and turned to the goddess Neith for guidance, who is known for her wisdom. Neith was frequently called upon to mediate divine disputes. She proposed that Horus be granted rulership over Egypt, while Set would receive free reign over the desert and foreign lands. Understanding that no territory could match the grandeur of Egypt, Neith also recommended that the Ennead assign the foreign goddess Anat and Astarte as companions to Set, offering a form of consolation. This version of the myth may predate the story in which Isis resolves the conflict, as Neith was an ancient goddess prominent in the pre-dynastic period, whose qualities were later incorporated into Isis's character. But Set was not forever branded a deceitful usurper, for Set is not only the murderer of Osiris, but also the vanquisher of Apep and protector of the sun god Ra, which might be why Ra had a difficult time deciding. The Egyptians believed that the sun was Ra traveling on his solar boat across the sky, a journey that was perilous in the underworld. Apep was the chaos serpent, which was one of the most dangerous foes who threatened to swallow the bark whole. Set fought against him while standing on the prow of the solar boat. Quote, "Only Set is mighty enough to strike down Apep, because his realm, the desert, is the first or the final outpost defending the borders of Ra's cosmic order." In addition, the battle between Set and Apep manifests Seth's role as the god of thunderstorms, further expanding his role. Ironically, Set, the god of chaos, served as the main protector against the destruction of order when confronted by the mythic beast, and as we can tell, each myth keeps adding complexity to his character. Set was undoubtedly one of the most powerful gods in Egyptian mythology. He's a god of strength. Set wielded a scepter reportedly weighing more than 4,500 pounds. And the coffin texts, dating to before the New Kingdom, already portray Set's battle up against Apep, establishing a foundation for his later role in the contendings. This narrative, especially its conclusion, featuring Set's adoption by Ra, can reasonably be traced back to these early divisions. Consequently, Set is often adorned with titles such as the Chosen One of Ra or the Son of Ra. Set embodies a complex duality. He is both the slayer of a god and the protector of another, the instigator of chaos and the defender of order, the son of Nut and simultaneously the son of Ra. His myths capture this ambiguity, reflecting the difficulty of confining his character to a single consistent role free from contradiction. This might be my own conspiracy theory, but Sumeria is older than ancient Egypt, so I'm thinking that the original Set could be a transplanted version of Ea or Enki, and here's my evidence. Both gods are considered tricksters, which, to be fair, isn't that hard, but they both have feuds with their brothers. The origin of Enki was as a major Sumerian deity whose worship can be traced back to the city of Eridu over 6,500 years ago, making it one of the oldest documented religious practices in human history. He was later known by Ea in Akkadian, Babylonian, and Assyrian mythology. According to the Babylonian creation myth, the Enuma Elis, or Enki, Ea, was born to the earliest primordial gods, Apsu and Tiamat, though sometimes he's their grandson, making him one of the oldest beings in that cosmological framework, just like Set. The myths of Enki are among the most ancient found in cuneiform tablets throughout Mesopotamia, appearing from the 3rd millennium until the Hellenistic period. They both have key mythological conflicts, brother versus brother, as in A core part of Seth's mythology is his unrelenting jealousy with his brother Osiris. This ultimately led to the murder and him seizing the throne, and his battles with Horus, causing chaos in the world. However, he did have the other brother of Harrower in early versions. They would often compete, however they kept the world in balance, and this is shown in some of the other artwork. Although still depicted as a villain, Set also played a crucial role in defending the sun god Ra. There's a god of chaos in both religions, no surprise. In Egypt, it's Apep, and in Mesopotamia, it's Abzu, or Apsu, who is a personification of chaos and the deep, both of which are domains of Apep. The difference there is that Apsu was more about the stillness and potential of chaos, while Apep went full-on action destruction. Plus, Apep wasn't the father of gods like Apsu was. Another difference was their appearances, as Apep was a giant serpent, but Apsu is thought to have multiple forms, but isn't really described in text. Or could be the lion, griffin, dragon beast that the sun god is fighting in the bas relief. It's not clear, but they're not what this is about. The chaos are, however, both defined by their culturally respective counterparts, as Apep is killed every night by a defender of Ra, set in earlier versions before the kings started putting themselves into the pyramid texts, and Ea, or Enki, who killed Apsu. Yes, Set trapped Osiris in a box. Also, what is odd is Set is depicted as in addition to Osiris, Harrower's brother, and is left out of the Osiris death myth altogether. In this way, it would just be a competitive sibling rivalry, much like Ea and his brother Elil, as two of the most important gods in the Sumerian pantheon. It could sound familiar. We do know that people traded and exchanged their cultures with each other, so why not influence their gods too? And after all, Set did become known as the god of foreigners. By the time of Ramses II, the Osiris myth was well known, and Set had been transformed from a god of love, a protector, and a hero into the villain who stood for everything the Egyptians feared and hated. Disorder, chaos, waste, drought, famine, destruction, hunger, and foreign invasion or influence. He must still have had some of those resonant associations with this former role as a protective god for Ramses II to have elevated him to such a degree. But the occult of Osiris and Isis was so widespread by this time that it was difficult to understand how. Worship of Set and Horus had developed from the time of Perebset, so that by Ramses II's time, Horus was associated with the Lower Egypt, the north, and Set with Upper Egypt, the south. And inscriptions of the crowning of the king would show both Set and Horus officiating the regnal ceremony. In time, however, Set became so closely identified as the villainous murderer and usurper that he was replaced in these inscriptions by Thoth, the god of writing and wisdom. The popularity of Set is probably due to Egyptians' appreciation of balance and harmony. The concept of Ma'at was integral to Egyptian values and featured even in their understanding of the afterlife, where the heart of the deceased was weighed in the balance against the white feather of Ma'at. Osiris, as the god of fertility and life, required a counter in the form of Set as god of destruction and chaos, but not death. Even in this role, Set was sometimes considered beneficial, as he voluntarily held back his desert forces of dry winds and drought from the fertile lands of Egypt. Prayers to Set for protection from, essentially, himself, replaced the earlier amulets relating to love. Set, like many elements of the Osiris myth, influenced the early Christian mythology, shaping their figure of the devil, with the serpent Apophis also playing a role. His ties to darkness, wickedness, the color red, and his portrayal as a red-haired beast contributed to the image of Satan. Both figures ended paradise and were banished from the divine realm per defying orders. Set's link to deceit, war, destruction, and the serpent helped form the Christian idea of the ultimate deceiver opposing God. But in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Jesus is tempted by Satan in the desert, or in Matthew, the wilderness, and the early figure of Set was strongly associated with deserts and the unknown lands beyond Egyptian borders. Set kept his role from the Osiris myth, but in a new way, as a trickster and enemy of humans, blamed for their pain in a world that was first made as a paradise. and as pop culture continues, it's almost a bit surprising that Set hasn't received a rebrand of an anti-hero or the Loki transformation. I mean, he killed Agent Coulson and countless New Yorkers. Maybe Set's story is due for a reboot or the director's cut of the mythology that has been partially lost to society at large. After the one episode in Stargate and the Gods of Egypt movie, he really deserves another look. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Detours in Archaeology. Seth, the cult leader?
I hope you enjoyed this. If you did, please like and subscribe to the podcast, to my website. Leave a 5-star review, please, and leave a comment. I highly recommend going to the website and looking at all the pictures that go along with this article, all the artifacts, all the places. There are links in the description. There's also links to my Patreon, my Blue Sky account, my Instagram, where I have multiple different things coming up every week. And on my Patreon, I have bloopers on the drawing weeks. So I hope that you will enjoy it as I mess up a lot during these recordings. But thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I'm sorry for all of my pronunciation, names, and just words in general. I am sorry for all the crazy pronunciation of Icelandic words. I tried. Thank you for your patience. If you know of any corrections or you have more information or any questions, feel free to email me directly at detoursinarchaeology@gmail.com, or you can contact me really anywhere. And I have some merch in my website store.
I have a shirt that says, "It est quand illa dixit."
It means, "That's what she said" in Latin. I also have stickers, just small random things. I am on the Archaeology Podcast Network. So if you are new and listening to this for the first time, welcome. I really hope you enjoyed it. I mean, I hope you enjoyed it if you've listened to all of my episodes already. I have received some emails from people giving me different ideas about different things to do in the future. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. And I would very much like to write about some of the things that were talked about. Let me know if you want your name attributed when I do it. Otherwise, it can be anonymous.
All the music is from Scott Buckley and can be found at his website at scottbuckley.com.au.
I have one more myth that I learned when working at the Egyptian Museum. It must take place during the contendings, because it is a battle of wits between Set and Horus. So Set ejaculated into some sort of drink or food and gave it to Horus. Now Horus knew that Set was tricksy, so he also decided to, one, dump the wine or food into the Nile, and two, ejaculate himself into a head of lettuce and give it to Set, because Set was known to eat only lettuce. Set did not think that Horus was tricksy, so he ate the lettuce himself. They both went to one of the gods, as Set saw Horus drinking or eating the food that looked exactly like what he had given him, so he said, "Haha, I tricked you, you ate my semen." Horus turns to the god and says, "No, I didn't, he actually ate my semen." The god, using his magic, and so the god calls forth the semen that Set had ejaculated, and it rose from the Nile. Then he rose Horus's semen from Set's head. From that, it is said that Thoth was created, the god of writing. I don't know specifically if this is true, but it is one of the funniest myths that I have ever heard. The next episode, I'm going to be doing something a little bit different. This will come out the week before Halloween, but on Halloween, I'm going to be doing a reading of one of my favorite stories by one of my favorite poets, Edgar Allan Poe, and I'll be reading The Raven. The next podcast week after Halloween, I'm going to be doing a deep dive into the mythology and history that is embedded within that poem. Until then, stay curious, stay inspired, and keep taking those detours.
Thanks again.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.